Thanks for listening to this podcast of Trending with Timmeri. If you haven't already subscribed, please catch us wherever you love to listen to your podcasts, from the Relevant Radio app to Apple, YouTube, you name it, we are there. And if you listen on Apple Podcasts, please be sure to go and give us a 5-star review to help other people discover the podcast. Anything you share in terms of episodes, whether it's texting it to a friend, posting on social media, helps to build up the kingdom for God, to help confront the challenging issues we face as a culture, but with joy, with hope, and with an eternal perspective where our faith collides with everyday life, bringing eternal principles to help us live our life joyfully.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timmeri on Relevant Radio.
Happy feast day of the presentation of our Lord in the temple, also known as Candlemas, as well as the purification of the Blessed Virgin Mary. And it's actually my wedding anniversary. Gabriel and I are celebrating 3 years today. Such a gift. In fact, I'll talk a little bit about our wedding and marriage, and I would be happy to take any of your questions. If you'd like to comment on Instagram, would love to take it. What we've learned the last couple years in marriage, I still consider us newlyweds and rookies. So I'll share a little bit later. But you know, looking back on our marriage, I actually am remembering, I shared a little bit about this last week, something that happened 3 years ago on our wedding day. As I was so excited for the wedding, we were getting ready. We had the hairstylist come to my home, and she was there to do our hair before the wedding. And in the course of the conversation, as we're getting ready in the morning here, you know, my sisters and I are there doing our makeup. We have, you know, all of our robes and everything on. We're taking photos before the wedding mass, just enjoying getting ready these last moments before the wedding. And here I am talking to this woman that is there to style my hair. And as she's with us all morning, her phone continues to go off and she's taking one set of pills after another set of pills. Lo and behold, she ends up sharing with me that she is actually going through the process of becoming a surrogate. A surrogate, that is, to carry a child for someone else who that child is not, in this instance, related to her in any way. This child has been created through the process of in vitro fertilization, and everything comes with that third-party reproduction process. And she shared that she wants to help someone else to have a baby, and that they could also use, her family, the extra cash. Now, I bring this all up because I mentioned last week the news of singer Nick Jonas from the Jonas Brothers, as well as actress Priyanka Chopra, husband and wife. They shared last week the news that they've just had a baby via a surrogate. Now, they were slammed by a feminist writer who's commented, making the claim, and this is very true if you know anything about surrogacy, that surrogacy is essentially only possible because we have poor women. And this is what it's leading to, is the preying upon poor women, the destruction towards poor women. It's not good for women. And it's interesting because she really made it sound as if this was something only that celebrities and the wealthy are doing. Although we see a trend there, we actually need to talk about this as people of faith, as pro-lifers, but also in the face of growing difficulties surrounding infertility. Now, grant, some people turn to surrogacy and in vitro fertilization due to infertility. Others choose surrogacy because it's a more feasible option if they don't want to be pregnant, if they believe this will impact their life negatively. Again, that's a whole other conversation for another day. But what I want to do today is to actually talk about problems and concerns surrounding surrogacy, the reality of its impact on the woman, and We'll also talk about some celebrity news. In fact, just this week, Selling Sunset star, if you're familiar with the Netflix streaming show about selling real estate in Southern California, former Playboy bunny, who's one of the stars in the show, Heather Ray, just shared this week that she herself is also going through the in vitro fertilization process. Fun fact, Heather Ray is from the same mountain community I grew up in. Isn't that much older than me. It's kind of crazy to think about her journey and where she went with the humble roots of the same sweet mountain community that I myself grew up in, dancing in the same dance studios and all of that. And to kind of just see and follow this story. We're actually going to talk about the show Selling Sunset later on. It's one of the top streamed shows on Netflix, and I do find it rather interesting, so we'll discuss that later today. But let's focus on surrogacy and in vitro fertilization. Some of the things we're going to discuss is how this is not just a trend among celebrities, the role that infertility plays in solutions, the challenge this poses for the pro-life movement, the impact on the surrogate, that person who chooses to carry the child, how to move forward, and also the role of faith. Because one thing I do see very common, whether it be the Oprah coverage of Brianna Lockwood, who's 52-year-old mother gave birth to her granddaughter because she was the surrogate, the woman carrying her own daughter's manufactured child. They talked about God. They talked about faith, and Oprah covered their story last year. Another story, for example, is Jacqueline Schultz, also now known, she used to be known as Jacqueline Schultz. She was actually on CBS reality show Survivor, the competition where people go and survive on various islands and various climates. Well, both her and her now husband, John Mish, were known for Survivor 29. They were contestants. In fact, Jacqueline Schultz was the runner-up for the show. She's now very well known as a social media Instagram influencer, and she, by the way, is also Catholic. Interesting fact. Anyways, Jacqueline and John Mish have actually shared and documented their fertility journey, also going through in vitro fertilization and using a surrogate, because she herself suffers from a rare complication known as MRKH, where the vagina and uterus are not fully developed or at times absent, so she couldn't have a child. There are so many stories that are prevalent in our face today, and we can even turn to people such as Tyra Banks, who, actress Tyra Banks, model Tyra Banks, who did not want to have a child via normal means because she wanted a surrogate to preserve her body. We could talk about a number of stories, but let's look for just a moment at the story of social media influencers Jacqueline and John Mish. Again, that story of MRKH, they cannot have a child via natural means, and they chose to turn to surrogacy and the process of in vitro fertilization. Now, I'll share with you some of the data and information about the success rates of actually going through the process. You may not know this, but the rate of success for IVF is actually very low. We'll get to that in just a minute. But let's follow a little bit of Jacqueline John Mish's story if you're not familiar. So they are currently in their third round of in vitro fertilization. So this has been a few year long journey. The first round of IVF failed. They were going through the process of harvesting her eggs. I believe, I'm not actually 100% sure if they are using her eggs and his sperm. I would have to double check that because of the MRKH impact. I'm not sure if she does indeed, if she is able to develop eggs given her condition. But again, long story short, either way, they're in their third round. They're using someone's eggs and someone's sperm to go about manufacturing a child. So the first round failed. They were crushed when they were not able to conceive this way. And we'll walk through what a round of IVF sort of looks like in a minute. The second round actually was successful in the effect that eventually, after developing countless new lives through the process of IVF, eventually they found themselves pregnant with one baby via surrogate, and at 20 weeks gestation, in fact, just a few days before I myself had my child in 2020, I remember following the journey on social media as Jacqueline and John Mish shared their story that they had a stillborn with their surrogate, and their baby had died back in 2020. That was their second round of in vitro fertilization. Jacqueline took it very hard. It was devastating. I remember praying for and thinking of them. It hit close to home because I had also just had my baby and had been following their story. And that's part of what's so interesting about many of the YouTube sensations, social media influencers, as well as actors and actresses. We love a good story. We want to see people who deeply desire to have a child to be able to have a child, to become parents. We want to delight in their little child. We want to delight in the growth and the transformation of them as a couple following their pregnancy story. This is why I think it's important as we continue the conversation, we have to acknowledge, and this is an important position we must hold, no matter the means in which a new life comes into the world, every child is a gift meant to be valued and respected. Our problem isn't with that child. The problem is with the process. And we're going to touch on a little bit of the church teaching on this as well as the human aspect of how this is negatively impacting women, couples, and children. So let's talk a little bit about what these three rounds of IVF are. Because by the way, Jacqueline and John Misch decided to try again for a baby starting about last fall. They are now facing a 21-week-old baby gestation. They have another surrogate carrying their baby, and they're very hopeful for a positive outcome and a healthy child. Pray for this couple. Pray for the success of a healthy delivery, because we do want to see a healthy delivery. Even though we do not approve the means of getting there, we can see that, again, every life is a gift from God. So here's what's happened. So in this third round of IVF that Jacqueline, John Misch have been going through, they've documented everything on social media. And again, as I mentioned, every human life is a gift from God meant to be cherished and respected. But the process is what's concerning. So, and I did confirm, indeed, Jacqueline is able to produce eggs. That's part of her journey of harvesting eggs. She's gone through that full process. She just isn't able to carry her own child. So here's the deal. They shared the news some months ago that in this third round of IVF that they have 24 fertilized eggs. What that is a new distinct human life. From the moment of fertilization, we knew, no, boom, even science is incredible. If you look at people who study embryology, from the moment of fertilization, also known as conception, we tend to interchange those words, that there's even the spark of life at the beginning where sperm and egg meet and penetrate. It's incredible. It's a miracle of human life that even scientists can be in awe of. And there's a moment for many people where they're reminded there is a God. Now, after these initial 24 babies in the early stages of life begin to develop, then by day three, Jacqueline and John Misch shared that they then had only 9 babies that made it to day 9. Because, and it's important to recognize in this process, that what we're talking about is we're taking the natural means of creating new human life, and we are here taking human life outside of the womb into essentially a petri dish in the context of a medical facility to foster and try to create new life. Now, with that, what that means is these children in their earliest stages are in less than normal circumstances. In fact, we couldn't say in some respect more hostile circumstance than where they're supposed to be. Whether it be a woman who struggled with infertility and is having a hard time carrying to term. Sometimes we're trying to artificially create new life and these children don't make it very far into development. Or they don't make it very far into development because they're outside of the womb in the process of creation. So in this instance, these new, beginning with 24 babies, only make it to now 9 babies make it to day 3. Then they share the news publicly that they have 6, quote, genetically normal embryos. So what they're now saying is that they've determined that 6 of these babies are now, quote, genetically normal. Now, they may have selectively reduced or aborted some of the others if they believe that something was wrong with them. They may have seen that those other 3 babies in their earliest stages of development died because there was something wrong. So what we've seen is we've gone from 24 now all the way down to 6. Now we hear the story that on day 6, 4 of those babies made it to day 4. So we've dropped from 24 new human lives all the way down to 4. Then, boom, the next piece of information is that Jacqueline and John Mish are pregnant with one child. That is, they're expecting a baby via surrogate. So my question is, if they had 6 genetically normal embryos, those are babies in the early stages of life, then down to 4 babies that made it to day 6, and then all of a sudden they have one baby with a surrogate, what did they do with the other babies? Did those babies not make it through the process and died along the way because of the transferring and movement from outside of the womb into the womb of the surrogate? Did they selectively reduce the number of children by putting maybe all 4 embryos into the surrogate, but then only one took to those last days? Or did perhaps they abort the other 3? Did they freeze the other 3 babies? I don't know. But this also poses the problem that the church, the Catholic Church itself, has also recognized, that we are creating countless new human lives. And did you know the fact that millions of babies are frozen and stored in the earliest stages of human life because people are choosing to not just save their eggs and save sperm, but they're choosing specifically to actually save babies and freeze them in that early stage development in the event they want to have another child later, in the event that they struggle with fertility later, in the event that they find themselves divorced and they still want to have a child later potentially with someone else, or even by themselves. In fact, we follow the story where even some of the Kardashian girls have actually been choosing to freeze their eggs just to make sure, in the event they want to have more children later on, that that is possible. So what we're talking about here is the creation of human life outside of natural conception between a husband and wife. Putting a child in the earliest stages of development in a less than ideal circumstance where those children often die in the process, are either frozen in the process if more babies are developed than we'd like, or selectively reduced, that is, aborted. Did you know that abortion is a part of the in vitro fertilization, surrogacy, artificial insemination, that entire process? Now, grant, not everyone chooses to abort along the way, but it is a normal part of the process. This is in part why the church is against it, in addition to some other things that might be interesting for you to ponder. The Congregation for the Doctrine of Faith has continued to emphasize the church's teaching regarding human life and third-party reproductive technologies. And in a document titled The Instruction on Respect for Human Life in Its Origin and on the Dignity of Procreation, it talks about how essentially the baby, the new baby being conceived, has a right to, one, be conceived in the loving embrace of their mother and father, has a right to be carried in the womb of their own mother, and has a right to be brought into the world with his or her own parents. And so, in other words, what the church has upheld is the fact that babies need to come into the world through the natural process, the loving act of husband and wife. Second, that the child has a right to be carried in the womb by that child's own mother. This is actually important for bonding and development. And third, and it's not just important for the baby, it's important for the mother too. And third, it's important that this baby's brought into the world via his or her actual parents, the child's welcomed into the world by his or her actual parents. In fact, the Congregation for the Doctrine of Faith says that this is important through the secure and recognized relationship to his own parents. It goes on to say the child can discover his own identity and achieve his own human development. That is, through a relationship with his own parents. This is so important. You see, the Catholic Church, its teaching demands the preservation of the marital act and the preservation of a right that the child has. Now, we don't talk about these rights from the perspective of being written into law. There actually are many countries that do not allow in vitro fertilization or in surrogacy. One, because they know it preys upon poor people, but two, because there are concerns about its impact on children and allowances for children, because children have rights too, in a most fundamental right that all of us should be able to recognize is the importance of knowing our parents, of being raised by our parents. And if you're just joining us, you're listening to Trending with Tim Ray Heard here on Relevant Radio. I hope if you're not able to join us for the full conversation, really spending a good amount of time today breaking down in vitro fertilization and surrogacy, that you'll head over to relevantradio.com/trending to subscribe and listen to this very important podcast. So let's talk about how, for just a moment, in vitro fertilization and surrogacy is different from adoption. Adoption is never the goal when someone goes to have a child. Perhaps, yes, some people have before tried to conceive a child, to place a child for adoption so that someone else could have a child. Yes, I know of that happening. But normally, adoption is to fill a void when the parent who conceived the child, gave birth to the child, when that parent finds themselves unfit, unable to give their child the best life possible. They think that the child would do better with different parents. And so to fill that void, they sacrificially place their child into the loving arms of parents who are chosen to raise their child because they believe and know that child would be better cared for than the care they themselves are capable of giving. In the process of adoption, there's respect for human life. There's nothing such as abortion. There's nothing such as trying to create life in hostile means or environments where a child was already struggling to thrive. Because in the reality is, in the process I explained just a couple minutes ago about in vitro fertilization, this negligible attitude with life leads to the natural destruction of children in the process and also the outright abortions that take place in the process of IVF. So it's important we understand that distinction where adoption is respecting life, respecting the natural process, and filling the void when otherwise a parent cannot take care of their children. And that's a very important distinction. Now let's come to another part of this, whether it be in vitro fertilization, the donation of eggs on the part of a woman, artificial insemination, sperm donation. We actually know a tremendous amount of scientific data about how unhealthy these processes are for individuals. In fact, many women are being encouraged to harvest and donate their eggs, going through the process of hyperstimulation of the ovaries and essentially leading the body to do something it's not meant to do. Normally, a woman really only produces one egg per menstrual cycle. When a woman goes through the process of donating eggs, there's a hyperstimulation that occurs of her ovaries in the effort to force multiple eggs to be produced at once. What happens is this can lead a woman to go into menopause early. It can cause inflammation and problems for her cycle, problems for future fertility. We have to remember that a woman actually has all the eggs she's going to have. She doesn't just develop new eggs. Those eggs are already housed in her body. So if she donates, let's say, 100 eggs, well, if she only has 200 eggs, or let's say 105 eggs, and she wants to have children naturally later on, but let's say donated 100 eggs for the sake of paying off some student loan debt, and next thing you know, she didn't conceive with those 5 eggs that were left. Now she herself is facing an infertility crisis. Also might be facing menopause early and a number of other health issues. That's another conversation for another day. The bottom line is that egg donation is extremely damaging and harmful for women's bodies, not just in the short term, but in the long term as well. And many women are being suckered into egg donation to pay off debt, to help them get out of poverty. And it's something that must be talked about and rejected, especially if you know a young person who's desperate for money, struggling with student loan debt, struggling to make ends meet. Don't let them be like the hairdresser that I had on the day of my wedding, who shared with me that she was becoming a surrogate because she needed money And with that, she was also happy to try and help someone who's struggling with infertility. Although that's altruistic of her, she's also being reduced to some of the lowest means to do so. It used to be that people turned to the trade of all trades that we know of at times, prostitution, to help fill in the gap financially. While many women today who seemingly are functioning as everyday members of society are turning to egg donation and even surrogacy to help fill their financial means, perhaps a little more respectful and altruistic, it's still preying upon poor women and women who are vulnerable to need a couple extra dollars. You're listening to Trending with Timory here on Relevant Radio. I'm going to come back talking about the impact of IVF and surrogacy on the surrogate. We're going to talk about how we must discuss this as a pro-life movement. And also, it's my wedding anniversary. We'll talk about marriage as well. I'll be right back here on Trending.
Relevant Radio can always be heard loud and clear
on your smart speaker.
Listen live, listen to your favorite show whenever it fits your schedule, access our exclusive In Conversation with God podcast, the Glenn Story Corner podcast, and more.
Programming brought to you by Solidarity HealthShare. The new Solidarity One program offers expedited sharing of medical bills for even faster service, expanded senior discounts, pharmacy sharing, and greater flexibility to fit any healthcare budget. Learn more at CatholicHealthShare.com.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Welcome back to Trending. We're taking a deep dive today on the issue of surrogacy in our culture. It's an important conversation if you've not been with us. We've been talking about the trend of everyone from celebrities to social media influencers turning to surrogacy and in vitro fertilization in the face of infertility or as a choice for bringing new life into the world. And Grant, as we take this deep dive, I hope you'll go back and listen to the podcast if you've not been with us, because we've been walking through step by step the impact on the woman, the problem, the process, how abortion can be a part of the journey, and much more. So please head over to relevantradio.com/trending to subscribe, or subscribe wherever you catch your podcasts so you can listen to this journey and share it with others. I can't tell you how often I've even spoken to Catholic priests who didn't quite understand the process of IVF and surrogacy. They just knew that the church taught against it. And when they started to hear just some of a couple of the facts I'm sharing with you, they went, "Oh, wow, no one should be touching it." Yet for some reason, as people of faith, we tend to think that it's okay. Someone struggling with infertility, they should be able to bring a new life into the world. We don't know and we don't talk about the negative impact it has on the woman, the child, and even the marriage. So I'm sharing with you resources today on this. We're talking about IVF, egg donation, artificial insemination, as well as sperm donation and its negative health impact on the individuals involved. We're just talking about egg donation, and also whether you're an egg donor or you're going through the process of IVF yourself, those same negative consequences we just talked about are the same ones that women are experiencing, truly impacting their bodies in the short and long term. If you missed that, please go back and listen to the podcast available to you. So let's talk a little bit about the impact as well on the man who's donating sperm. This is, again, one of the problems with this is in the process, masturbation is a part of that journey to donating sperm, and it's not healthy for men. It's leading to difficulties within the context of the marital act, and it, in general, is not a healthy thing to do for the men who are struggling now with everything from ED and much more today, because this is such a normal and seemingly okay thing, which the church itself actually teaches against. That gift is meant to be within the context of marriage, not for self-pleasure, and also not for creating new human life outside of the context of marriage. Much more could be said on that, but let's speak for a moment about the impact of the process of IVF and surrogacy on the surrogate. You may have followed the story last year of Brianna Lockwood. It was a huge feature on Oprah, and in fact, it's been all over social media. Brianna Lockwood and her husband struggled for years with infertility and eventually decided to turn to IVF as a means of conceiving a child, and were in the search of a surrogate. Along the way, Brianna Lockwood's own mother, who at the time was 51 years old and very healthy, said she would be happy to be the surrogate for her own granddaughter. So in fact, 51-year-old mother of Brianna Lockwood carried to term her grandchild as the surrogate, and at 52 years old, birthed her grandchild and gave a child to her daughter, Brianna Lockwood. Now, pretty incredible story, I have to admit, and I think we all should be amazed at how far medical technology has come. I already spoke to the problems such as abortion and negligence with new human life and the problem taking this act outside of marriage, but I want to speak now for a moment of the impact that surrogacy has on the, quote, gestational carrier. That is the woman who carries the baby for a couple. No one's talking about the fact that in many instances, in fact, the gestational carriers are choosing that perhaps if multiple embryos are implanted, multiple babies, that is, in the early stages of human life, are implanted into the surrogate's womb, that when the couple who's hired out this womb to rent chooses to selectively reduce, that is, abort some of, let's say, three of the four children, that sometimes the surrogate will say, well, no, I'd like to keep the other three that you don't want. But legally, the couple hiring the surrogate has the right to have those other three babies aborted, therefore forcing the surrogate through the process of abortion. Now, the surrogate has written away and given away many of her rights in the process of surrogacy. It preys upon the poor. So what we're seeing is some women who are suffering the impact of post-abortion syndrome, some who are suffering not just psychologically, but as well as health-wise from having gone through abortions in the process of being a surrogate, other women who, after going through the process of 9 months of carrying a child, have been bonding with a child and suddenly want to keep the children for themselves. There have been many court cases and battles over this, of which the surrogate, the person carrying the baby, has no rights, especially in the United States. In fact, did you know that the United States is looked down upon because we have little to no regulating bodies having to do with surrogacy? I know Michigan and a handful of states do have some restrictions, but for the most part in the United States, surrogacy is a free-for-all. In fact, where I came from in San Diego, a number of couples from France would actually come to one of the hospitals in San Diego because they would hire surrogates and have babies born here in the States and adopt them and take them back to France and other parts in Europe because we have such a free-for-all means of creating new human life and we prey upon poor women. In fact, I've been in a coffee shop before where a woman was brought over from abroad who could barely speak English, and she was being recruited by someone, by the way, who worked for a Catholic hospital to become a surrogate for a couple, and she was being asked to basically sign away all rights having to do with everything from medical expenses to you name it because she needed money. And she was being preyed upon and used. Now, one other thing that a lot of people don't talk about with the impact of surrogacy on the surrogate is that many surrogates go through postpartum depression. That is, after they give birth to the baby, they don't have the gift of bonding and spending time with that child. They don't have the gift of all of the extra happy chemicals that are going on in the brain when nursing, when snuggling with, when holding a baby, that are meant to help a mother in transitioning into this new place in life, to help her with transitioning through all of the hormonal ups and downs that occur after pregnancy. In fact, one of the little known discussions is that the feature story from Oprah, the story about Brianna Lockwood, whose own mother at 52 years old gave birth to the granddaughter, being a surrogate, she actually suffered from a severe postpartum depression. And they tried to claim that they were open and transparent, sharing part of the stories, but In fact, it's sad to see that here her own mother is suffering in postpartum, yet Brianna Lockwood's here celebrating and delighting in her new baby. Although, again, medical technology has come so far, we can't ignore the psychological, interpersonal side of how surrogacy is seriously harming and damaging women in the process. And this is the reality of it. I won't forget some years ago, coming back to IVF itself, I had run into a man at a coffee shop who, for some reason, had been like looking at my computer screen, and I had been doing some research on IVF. And he looked at me and said, "Hey, I see you're researching IVF." I said, "Oh, yeah, what do you think about it?" And he goes on to share his story. He was in about his 60s, and he said, "Well, I don't know what you think about IVF, but I'd like to share with you a little bit about my story." He and his wife had struggled with fertility for years. His wife was desperate to have a child, a beautiful, full of life human being. After years of struggling with infertility, she couldn't swallow what was happening, and she insisted that the two of them go through the process of IVF. Loved his wife, was willing to do anything with her to, you know, bring about new life in the world. He wanted to make his wife happy. They then went through the process of multiple rounds of in vitro fertilization. As they went through round after round of IVF with no success, his wife, now over 20 years later, is really struggling. She was seriously impacted in terms of her health through the process of IVF. She can't work, has a hard time socializing with people, and has a hard time leaving the house. Now, she was impacted in her health, in her levels of depression and anxiety, in her sorrow. It impacted her marriage. And her husband shared with me that he wishes he could do anything he could to get his wife back, but he knows the process of IVF was so devastating and heartbreaking for her that he recognizes mourning the loss and inability to conceive would have been one thing, but mourning the loss of countless children and lives lost via the process of IVF with never a successful birth had a far more negative impact on her health, on her psychologically, and on their marriage, and on her friendships, that it has truly stymied her growth and her ability to function day to day. And he said not a lot of people talk about it. He was so relieved when he learned that I speak about the impact of IVF and surrogacy on the women and men and couples. And he said, and I shared with him, you know, I was Catholic, and, you know, I was grateful for the church's teaching saying no to IVF, that sometimes we have a hard time understanding why and where that no comes from, because we think it sounds cold and mean, especially when people are struggling to conceive. But the reality is that the process and the impact is extremely negative, whether there's a child that results from the attempt or even when children don't result from the attempt. Some interesting facts, and I think these are important to ponder. Many people, not just celebrities, social media influencers, and the wealthy, are choosing IVF and surrogacy. Now, I'm not talking about surrogacy. I'm just talking about IVF rounds for a moment. Did you know that on average, per round of IVF, it costs about $12,000 to $14,000? Now, that's assuming that you're using your own sperm and your own egg as a couple. That number can fluctuate if you need other variables to help you along in the process. Now, it's known that the success rate is extremely low. Most couples go through at least a few rounds of IVF. So let's say on average, at least paying about $36,000. Many couples do not have money for this. And in fact, they're actually going into debt in an attempt to conceive and have new life. What we've seen, if we look at some of the statistics, is that the rate of actually having a live birth of a baby is very, very low. For 7 cycles of IVF that were approaching about $100,000, if someone's between the age of 40 and 44, which is one of the most common ages for people to attempt IVF, that there's not even a 60% success rate. In fact, it's not even a 50% success rate. Between the ages of 40 and 44, you'd have to go through 8 rounds of IVF. Again, right around $100,000 out of pocket. And then you might have a 1 in 10 chance of giving birth to a live baby. For those under the age of 30, the success rate is a little higher, but it's not even 50%. If you go through multiple rounds of IVF, you might see a success rate of maybe 4 out of 10 people seeing a live birth occur from a baby. You see, this is the reality. The success rate for having a child through IVF is not common. Any success rate numbers you might see isn't after one round of IVF, but 7, 8, 9, and 10. Not everyone goes for 10 rounds of IVF. Not everyone can afford it. Not everyone can handle it psychologically or emotionally or physically because of the negative impact it has on a woman's body. You see, this is not the answer to fertility. I want to come back here in just a few minutes, and we're going to discuss the impact that IVF has on the married couple, why we need to talk about this as a pro-life movement, and also some solutions for people who are struggling with infertility. You're listening to Trending with Timmeri here on Relevant Radio. I'll be right back continuing to document the impact of IVF, surrogacy, egg donation, and more on people who are facing fertility struggles.
I like to call purgatory the mudroom of heaven.
The Cale Clark Show.
Knock off the crud from the outdoors before we can come in. Steve is calling from Minneapolis.
First of all, let me just say I really appreciate this show. And I grew up Protestant, but I tell you, I'm really warming up to Catholicism. Can you explain to me in a nutshell this concept of purgatory?
Thank you for your very kind words. And let me try to answer your question about purgatory. I'll tell you what the Catechism says about it. It says, all who die in God's grace and friendship, but still imperfectly purified, are indeed assured of their eternal salvation. But after death, they undergo purification so as to achieve the holiness necessary to enter the joy of heaven.
There's a lot that I'm rethinking, and I'm not sure where I'm going to land on it, but I do appreciate your prayers.
The Cale Clark Show, afternoons at 5 Central on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Today's programming is brought to you by Colby Academy. Offering a customized Catholic curriculum, Colby Academy knows the ultimate goal of education is to help our children be saints. More info at relevantradio.com/Colby.
We're talking about what you're thinking about. You're listening to Trending with Timmeri on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Today, we've taken a deep dive on the topic of surrogacy, in vitro fertilization, egg donation, and everything related to third-party reproduction, and really the crisis it poses for people of faith, for those who are struggling with infertility, but also for the pro-life movement, that many people with the increase in infertility are turning to these third-party reproduction technologies. And many of us have been overwhelmed with joy of the news of new life, but sometimes are surprised, whether it be celebrity Hollywood or influencers on social media and YouTube, or maybe even people in our own families who have shared that they have conceived a child via these means. Again, always celebrating the gift of life. However, there is a problem with the process of getting there. Doesn't mean we should disrespect or think less than anyone who may have been conceived using third-party reproduction. But what we're talking about is a respect for the process of human life. And I shared with you the importance of what the church teaches about giving those rights to the child. The right for a child to be conceived by their parents within the loving embrace of marriage, and the right of a child to be carried in the womb by his or her own biological parents, as well as birthed by their parents and then raised by their parents. We talked about the caveat of understanding the difference from adoption. And so here I want to speak for a moment really to the importance of understanding the impact of infertility in our culture. All of us want to hear a good story, whether it be an influencer or a celebrity or a family member, someone who's struggling with fertility. We want them to be able to have that perfect experience of having a child, raising a child, seeing them transformed by the great story of human life. However, that doesn't mean that any means of getting there is okay. And I think that that's what's at the heart of the conversation. We've seen through this deep dive, and if you've missed it, you can head to relevantradio.com/trending to subscribe to the podcast or wherever you catch your pods in order to hear kind of the reasons behind the impact interpersonally on our health. And here's the reality. Fertility is becoming an increasing problem. We've seen stats that have said by 2050, nearly everyone will need some means of intervention to help in conceiving children. This is why we need to provide solutions and information. Number one, recognizing that NAPRO technology is an incredible gift to those struggling with fertility, helping to treat underlying health causes with solutions that are human-centered, respect the faith, and have real sound science and data behind creating a wholeness and a health rather than putting a band-aid on things. Second, it doesn't tell false stories about promising people children when it won't, taking people down a path of heartbreak, as we've discussed about failed attempts at in vitro fertilization after multiple rounds. We also need to talk about the reality of the wounds of infertility and needing to heal. I think of people such as Emily Stimson Chapman, who's an incredible advocate for people who have struggled with infertility, then having to make peace with that before possibly even choosing the path of adoption, first coming to terms with the difficulty that's there. She has great things to say. We'll have to have her on the show sometime soon, but that's Emily Chapman. She's a social media influencer, a Catholic writer. Another resource is Organic Conceptions. It's a support program for people who are walking through that process of infertility or trying to conceive. We need to provide this information, especially NAPRO technology, for those people who are hungry for answers to try and find real, true means of addressing fertility. This is a challenge for the pro-life movement as well as people of faith, and so we have to be there to give solutions for those who are searching for them and not allow our loved ones to go down that journey of surrogacy and IVF that is bad for marriages. I was joined regularly here on Trending by Dr. Susan Caldwell, and we'll include a link in the podcast notes for today's show to the conversation I had with her. She's a NAPRO physician. She's a NAPRO doctor helping people struggling with their fertility, and she herself actually has children from IVF, but she would recommend it to no one before her deep reversion into her Catholic faith. She shares actually about the impact the journey of IVF had on her health, her then marriage, her family as a whole. And so we'll include a link in the show notes to that conversation, because the reality is that IVF is creating serious wounds within the context of marriages, as that chase and that race for a baby can be so damaging. And this is where NAPRO technology is so helpful, because it sees not just the individual woman, but the couple, the relationship, the journey, and the importance for healing that may need to occur if infertility is actually at the heart of the problem and not actually the fact that we need to be treated as women, treating our health problems and not just being put on birth control. This is something near and dear to my heart. So I hope that, you know, in starting this conversation, we can continue to help those around us. But I want to address one last point on this journey of infertility, surrogacy, IVF. And that is, as you follow the stories of celebrities, influencers, I even think of Nick Jonas and Priyanka Chopra, who just shared their news of their baby that they've had via surrogate, as well as reality TV contestants from CBS Survivor, Jacqueline and John Misch, or even the story of Brianna Lockwood who was covered by Oprah. All of these stories of IVF and surrogacy, we actually see people praising God and thanking God for the gift of life in the face of fertility difficulties, or just in the face of the gratitude for the precious new bundle of life. This is a good thing that we're thanking God, but the problem again is the destruction of human life in the process, as well as the false answers, the false solutions, and the damage that's done along the way to those people involved. So although we always want to praise God and be grateful, we have to remember that even when these are faith-filled journeys, the means of getting there isn't okay. And we have to remember that God can work always, no matter what we're doing in our lives, in the midst of our sin, in the midst of our bad choices. God delivers us from our sins. That's what Jesus Christ came to do. And so even as we see faith in the midst of these surrogacy and IVF stories, people may say, well, God had to have blessed this. It must be okay. These are people of faith, or this is inspiring faith in them. I even think of the story of social media influencer and former contestant of CBS Survivor, Jacqueline Mish. She shared how after the second round of IVF and having lost a child at 20 weeks to stillbirth back in 2020, it inspired deeply her faith journey. She started reading the Bible every day. She read it cover to cover. She talks about how much her faith has grown, and then she goes for a third round of IVF. Does that mean that just because her faith has grown that God approves of third-party reproduction? No. All of us, in the midst of our spiritual journey, fall into sin, fall into temptation. This is why we need Jesus Christ. And I think, if anything, it's a reminder for us of the importance of understanding that God, even in the midst of our bad choices, can deliver us, can bless us. Does he bless us for our sin? No. He blesses us because we are his children. He blesses us because he created us and loves us and wants to elevate us from our bad choices to work to perfect us so that we too can become like him. And so, again, I don't think we should be put off by the faith-filled journey of some people who are choosing IVF and surrogacy. We should actually pray for them, be glad that they are turning to God, but we should also be reminded again that God is our deliverer, God is our savior, and he works to Christify us in this process of Christosis, the perfection of the human person, to ultimately bring us to him. That's why this journey here on earth is only a pilgrimage. It's not the final resting place. And this is a very important reminder for us as we talk about this whole journey of IVF and surrogacy. Thanks for taking this deep dive with me, because this topic's so important. It's complex. It's addressing us not just with our influencers and celebrities, but it's also within the context of our families. And infertility isn't going anywhere. We're seeing a rise in this crisis. And there's nothing wrong with desiring to be a parent, but the means of getting there, that's what we have to talk about. Overcoming this designer baby attitude, which, by the way, we didn't even get into some of the problems with a designer baby approach and even the impact of having a designer baby that is like trying to have this perfect genetic makeup of a child, the impact that that actually has on the baby and young person as they develop and the parent's attitude toward the child. There's actually some really fascinating research. But for today, that kind of helps us to really better understand this whole struggle surrounding fertility. Please, again, it's my anniversary. Please pray for us. Happy feast day of the presentation. It's one of my favorite days to go to church. If you had your candles blessed, or maybe even your church, because it officially marks the end of the full Christmas season with a presentation of our Lord. Perhaps like we did today at Mass, Joy to the World was sung, which it was such a great reminder of the joy of Christ and even those elements of the Christmas season in our faith that can bring such rich joy to our lives. And it's a reminder that we need Christ. He is our deliverer. He is our savior. And that's why this marking of the feast day of the presentation really does change our entire life.